So maybe I'll walk through my process. So I'm eating pawpaws in September. As soon as I'm done eating that pawpaw, I clean the seeds, usually in my mouth. It's the easiest way to do it. I get every little bit of flesh off of that seed, not a speck. And then I will put those into a Ziploc bag. And as long as I have a decent amount in a Ziploc bag, I don't add anything else. I don't add a paper towel. I don't add, peat moss or sand, nothing. I will poke a few holes in the bag just to make sure, there's a little bit of air. I'll poke holes like a safety pin, right? And then I will stick that bag of pawpaw seeds in my refrigerator. And I will mostly forget about them. I will make sure and look at them, maybe every month or so, make sure that, there's no molds or anything in there. Otherwise, I leave them until, since I'm starting mine as early as I can, usually about mid-February, I will pull those seeds out of the refrigerator. And I don't have a fancy setup for a nursery or anything. I do have a small nursery here. But I don't have a bunch of, fancy gadgetry or greenhouse or anything. And I found I really don't need one, especially with pawpaw. And if I do my timing right. So what I do is I have one 12-inch heating mat, a little seedling heating mat. And I take a turkey a pan, those aluminum turkey pans, and I will put down about an inch worth of like compost. I'm not a big fan of using peat moss and sphagnum moss, stuff that's coming from another ecosystem to, help my own seems, I don't know, I don't do it. So I easily make my own mixes by breaking down wood chips in the woods and, just doing natural composting. So I will put down basically what's the equivalent of a seeding mix and make sure it's damp. And I will then put my seeds out. Now, mind you, I grow, 400 or 500 pawpaws a year, right? So, but you could do this with five seeds, doesn't matter. And what I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll just spread all my seeds out on that top of that 1 inch of compost, and I'll put down another inch of compost, and I'll do it again. I'll usually do three or four layers like that, so that I can get 300 or 400, pawpaws going on a 12-inch heating mat. And then what I'll do is I'll make sure the heating mat has a probe, for checking the temperature of the medium. So there's a couple different types of heating mats. Some will just tell you what the heating mat tells you it's heating at, and then you want the one that has the probe, and you stick the probe in the medium to get the actual, reading of what temperature is in there, right? And I shoot for 85 degrees. Right, so I'm going for 85 degrees inside my medium, and what I do is then I take another aluminum turkey basting pan, I stick it on top of the other one, I just clamp them shut, and that just holds the moisture in for me. And then I will check them every couple days just to make sure the moisture content in there is steady. And in 14 days, like almost to the day, my seeds all start germinating. Right. And I get, 90%+ germination rates.
Oh, wow.
So, and this is very different than what a lot of people are experiencing. And I'll talk about that here in a minute too. But I just want to state it that, when things are just kind of done in a good chronological order, that the pawpaws germinate readily. They have high viability, seed viability. And they're ready to grow and go. So I germinate them in complete dark, right? So we have an old boiler room on our homestead that's completely pitch black, but it's warm, right? And so what I'll do is I order, this is one of the only times I'll actually buy something manufactured for my tree work, is I will order 12-inch deep tree pots from Stew and Sons. They're out on the West Coast, and when they do all kinds of tree pots. And so these tall 12-inch deep tree pots, what I'll do is I make my own compost mix again in the woods, and I will fill my and I use soil. The recipe that I use for my nursery work is in my new pawpaw book as well. I will fill my pots and I will actually bring them in about the same time that I'm starting my seeds at the beginning of the germ, you know, the beginning of the process and the germination mat. I will fill those pots and I will bring them into my little boiler room and I'll put them in milk crates. So I'll get 9 of these pots per milk crate. And then I can easily just kind of, you know, fit them into a small space. And that soil begins to heat up because remember, it's mid-February, right? So I'm bringing in this cold soil and then I'm giving it a couple of weeks to warm up. So when those seeds, when that root radical just begins, like a little tail, like a little pigtail, just pops out. I mean, just barely visible out of the bottom of that pawpaw seed. I'm taking it and I'm sticking it in, you know, about a half inch or so, you know, inch deep into my pots, right? And that's it. And then I usually put wood chips on top of my pots, make sure they're moist. And then I will pretty much forget about them for 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm just leaving them in pitch dark, you know, boiler room that's nice and warm. You know, it's a good 75 degrees in there, 70, 75 degrees. And that whole time, that pawpaw root is just growing, 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 growing. I mean, 9+ inches down. And then, let me see, it's about mid-April when, you know, our temperatures are warming up and really the danger of strong frosts are past. I'll start to get my very first shoots starting to poke out of the top of my pots. And I'm like, okay, time to bring these outside. So then I'll bring them outside and I have converted like an old A-frame chicken coop. And I also converted an A-frame children's playground set and just kind of put chicken wire over it. And I put shade cloth on it and it's in full sun. And I use 30 to 50% shade cloth. And I will just bring my milk cartons full of, you know, the sprouting pawpaws, and I will stick them in there, and then I will almost literally forget about them again until the fall when I, you know, bring them out for our pawpaw fest and start selling them. And there, you know, the tops grow the first year in good conditions. You know, you might get anywhere between 6 and 12 inches of top growth, but your root will already be starting to poke out of the bottom of that 12-inch pot. And this again is just the same season, right? So I began germination in February, and then ideally that tree is getting planted that fall. That way that root is totally unencumbered. You know, it's never been restricted, you know, air pruned, et cetera, et cetera. It's got its fullness and I plant that in the ground. That helps that tree access, you know, all of the available nutrients and water for its establishment, you know, over the next couple of years. Now, you do not have to grow pawpaws this way. Unfortunately, I see pawpaws, you know, 3-year-old pawpaws grown in 1-gallon pots. And, you know, that's 5 inches deep. So that root been compromised and, you know, it wants to live, it wants to survive. So it's going, maybe the top looks good. The top of the tree might be 2 feet tall, you know, but it's in like a 1-gallon pot. And so, okay, you can plant that and yeah, you baby it, you love it. And, you know, it should be able to re-root and regenerate itself, but you've got to really, you know, make sure you've got everything in good condition for that tree. To help get it established. Whereas I find taking the time and working with the natural, you know, growth of the root and not compromising it allows those trees to establish very strong and naturally. So I'm kind of a proponent for that. You will hear all kinds of people doing it in different ways and poo-pooing that it's not important, but that's the way I roll with it. And my pawpaws are happy. You know, I'm getting 35 to 50 pounds, you know, of fruit per tree. You know, so I've, you know, it's working well. So I don't know what I missed there. Did I skip some steps?
I don't know. What I liked about it is it was simple. You know, you walk through it. I understood every single part of the process. And I like when you're like, you know, you just leave it alone. You let it do its thing. And so it doesn't take high-tech gadgetry. It doesn't take a lot of expensive things or know-how to do. And so I think that's beautiful.
Well, thank you. And well, now that I've thought about it, let me talk about some variations.
Sure.
So there is, you know, direct seeding, as I mentioned, which is even better in the sense that you're not transplanting, you're not disturbing. I mean, things that grow from seed and have never been moved usually produce the strongest plants. And that plays out certainly in the long run. So if you're talking about a nut tree or long-lived anything, productive tree especially, if it's able to grow from seed naturally as nature does it, never moved, never disturbed, they tend to be much more robust, more disease resistant, just you know, really healthy. Whereas when you start to interact and transplant and move stuff around, I mean, it's rough, you know, in something's infancy. You can imagine as being just a child, you know, if you're restricted when you're young in any way, that can stunt you. And it's very similar with, you know, with plants. So if you can plant directly, this is great, but really it's a game of patience because the conditions I told you about and the way that I did it was all under temperature and warmth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say naturally, a raccoon eats a pawpaw and he goes and he poops it out. And that seed, you know, sits, you know, ideally the leaves fall on it. So it's got that protection. It stays moist. It gets stratified, which means it goes through. It does have to go through about a 90 to 100 day stratification. So that for me was the refrigerator, but outside it would naturally happen, but it does need that stratifying. So that pawpaw seed would then the following probably, you know, late spring, because you need the temperatures for that seed to begin to wake up, right? Mm-hmm. But it may not be till, you know, maybe, you know, May until it starts to even begin to send out that root radical, right? And it's going to send out that root radical, and depending on the soil temperature, it's going to grow at a certain rate. And, you know, that could easily be at least 2 more months before it starts to send up that shoot. I mean, it's 2 months almost for me in warm conditions. So you're talking, what, all of May, all of June. You might not, and you might be at the earliest you would see a shoot from something that you direct seeded start to come up in July, right? So a lot of people were like, oh, I planted them and nothing happened, or, you know, so there's a couple of reasons that might happen. I mean, it needs to stay consistently moist. That seed can never dry out. So remember, I ate it, I put it in the bag, I put it in the refrigerator. Don't let them dry out. As they begin to dry out, they lose viability, you know, pretty rapidly. So number one trick to pawpaw, saving pawpaw seeds and growing them is to not let the seed dry out. Not that there's not still possibility. I've heard stories of people who dried their pawpaw seeds and had some germinate. I'm telling you, it's a very adaptive species. It's very eager to adapt to all kinds of conditions, which is why it's such an exciting species to work with. And it can push new frontiers, and it is pushing new frontiers, you know, as far as where it's growing in the world. And so, okay, so you direct seed it, maybe do it in your garden bed, or maybe you put it ideally where it's going to be. You've kept it moist, it's in a root, and it sends up its shoot. That's a great situation, because that tree is going to be really healthy. And ideally, you are starting with seeds that have good genetics in them, meaning that they came from parents that produce really good fruit or have other characteristics you want. And when it comes to pawpaws, you know, they mostly cross-pollinate. There is the possibility that a single pawpaw tree will pollinate and fruit itself. So it's not impossible. I just wouldn't count on it. I wouldn't plan on it. Good to have, you know, some different genetics going on. So what we're starting to see coming up in the marketplace and nurseries, or even if you're buying seeds, are what are called select pawpaws, either select pawpaw seeds or select pawpaw trees. And what this pretty much means is that these seeds have come from grafted cultivars, so trees that are named. Neil Peterson's varieties are named after U.S. rivers with indigenous names. So we have Potomac, Shenandoah, Susquehanna, Wabash, Rappahannock. And if you have an orchard of those grafted cultivars and you take the pawpaw and you eat it, you take those seeds and you grow those seeds out, you're going to have what you call a select pawpaw. It's largely going to have the genetic mix of its parents. So if it came from Shenandoah, it's going to be Shenandoah and, you know, whatever it cross-pollinated with, right? So let's say another one's Potomac. So you've got, you know, you took the fruit off the Shenandoah, you saved the seed, you grew it out. You can't call it a Shenandoah, but you can call it a select seedling. And it's going to have mixed qualities of the Potomac and the Shenandoah in it. Which is great. You know, I think select seedlings are a wonderful way to go, as far as potentially coming up with new genetic makeups and new fruits. So that's another exciting thing about working with pawpaw, is that it hybridizes readily or cross-pollinates readily and comes up with potentially new cultivars or, you know, new fantastic fruits. And so when you're looking for seeds, look for that. Versus if someone can't tell you, they might have gone down, you know, to the C&O canal and collected some rotten pawpaw fruit. They don't know what it tastes like. And you're going to grow a wild pawpaw. And if you don't ever graft it, then you're just going to get the genetics of that wild pawpaw, which could be small fruit, full of seeds, you know, with bitter tannic flavors to it. So ideally, and this is becoming more common, it's less common, I believe, now to find, you know, just wild pawpaw seeds, but make sure they should, if you're buying pawpaw seeds or pawpaw trees, and if they're not, you know, if it's not a cultivar tree, then they should be able to tell you, you know, where the seeds came from, so that, you know, you're not wasting, you know, your time and space making sure that you're going to get something that you're going to enjoy eating.
Right.
But of course, pawpaws you can graft, and they graft very easily. They're almost as easy to graft as apples and pears. I graft lots of things, and pawpaws are one of the easiest. So I really encourage people, even if you never grafted, grafting is, again, not very complicated. It just takes timing and a little bit of practice, and you can watch YouTube videos and do it. I teach workshops, and within, you know, an hour or so, people know how to graft, and they successfully graft tree. My 5-year-old son grafts trees. So literally, grafting should not be a roadblock. So if you do have wild seed, or you're like, oh gosh, I don't know, I just heard this, I got a pawpaw out there, you can regraft it, you know, in sight, on site, where it is. So collect your scion wood, which means scion wood is last year's growth. The previous years, and that's where that's scion wood you would cut at the end of winter. So when you're pruning your trees end of winter, you can also collect your scion wood. So you take those cuttings, you know, anywhere between, you know, 4 and 8 inches of the cuttings, put them in a Ziploc bag, and those I usually will put a paper towel with or some moist medium, and put them in a refrigerator. And then you wait until the leaves start to come out. And pawpaws will wake up, you know, later than most species because they've adapted well. They know not to come out too early. So, you know, you may not see pawpaw leaves coming out until, you know, mid or, you know, late April, mm-hmm. whereas apple leaves have been out for, you know, a good month already. So anyway, as the leaves start to come out and temperatures are warming up, you can go out and you can graft your pawpaws that are in the ground already by taking that scion wood. And I cover this more in detail in my book. You really only want 2 or 3 of those buds. You don't want to use the whole scion stick. That's too likely to dry out on you. So anyway, the short of it is, if you're not sure what pawpaws you got, or you do have some wild pawpaws and they're in a good spot where you have sun and you think, hey, I want to regraft those, regraft them and then clear some space. You know, don't have a bunch of suckering pawpaws around the pawpaw that you want to be productive for you. You know, give it a good 10-foot diameter radius and, you know, cut those suckers off and down and keep them down and allow that tree to have space and get sun and be productive for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you were talking about the difference between wild pawpaws versus the cultivars, and I just want to point out, and for those of you if interested in your book, you have a really good picture in chapter 2 showing a comparison between a cultivar versus a wild pawpaw, and it's a really good comparison. Yeah. So.
And I don't want to. I'm definitely not bashing on wild pawpaws. I think it's awesome. Yeah. Wild, abundant fruit, definitely worth foraging. You know, it's a very exciting experience to go out in the wood and find a tropical fruit and eat it. It's life-changing. So definitely go out and hunt and collect and get wild pawpaws. But just know there's other options, you know, for growing them. And another option, so another low-tech. So another low-tech thing you could do is, let's say you had a couple pawpaw seeds, you're going to grow a couple pawpaws. You could go ahead and get a couple of these deep pots, or you could take, you know, milk cartons and cut the tops off, you know, recycle something, just as long as it's got like a deep, you know, root zone to it. And put your soil in a closet inside your house or somewhere. You can do this outside when it warms up if you want. And just stick your pawpaw seeds in that, you know, when after they're stratified. And just keep an eye on it. Make sure your pot is in the shade. Make sure it stays moist. And, you know, your pawpaws can start growing that way as well. You know, it doesn't have to be the intensity of the way I do it. It doesn't have to be the long-term way of sticking it directly in the ground. You know, just pot them up. Pot the seeds up and make sure they stay warm and moist. And, you know, your pawpaws will likely grow. So it's really a lot of variations here, too. And then, of course, okay, so now here's a big one. So what you will often hear is that pawpaws need shade for the first 1 or 2 years of their life. And this confuses a lot of people to where it's like, well, shucks, where do I plant it? So a lot of people, what they do is they'll get a pawpaw, they'll hear that, and they'll kind of go stick it in the shade. They'll go plant their recently bought pawpaw, you know, under a maple tree or, you know, somewhere it's shady because they think that's what it needs. It's not the case, generally speaking. So ideally, you are planting your pawpaw in full sun if you can. Now, if you've bought a pawpaw, it's already been growing for at least a year. Unfortunately, it's probably been growing for 2 or 3 years. And if it's grafted, definitely it's already been a couple of years. And it's past that more susceptible, infancy where, and I'm not even sure it's really the sun that is the problem for the pawpaw. I think it's having enough available moisture. Mm-hmm. Now, I say this because I have pawpaw growing in full sun that's been seeded either by me throwing a pawpaw out in my yard or a raccoon out there. It's at the base of a hugelkultur bed. So hugelkultur is, you know, a woody bed covered with soil. It's an awesome composting in place permaculture, you know, old Germanic, you know, practice. And at the base, which is a real sweet spot of a hugelkultur bed where the soil kind of settles out anyway, is a sweet spot for planting trees and pawpaws anyway. But I have a pawpaw that's grown from seed in full sun straight out of that, you know. So I'm like, well, hold on, that's straight full sun, you know, that pawpaw's very happy. So I'm going out on a limb here because nobody's really backed me up on this yet. But based on that and just my other feelings about the pawpaw to a degree is that it's really about the moisture. You know, they need lots of moisture, consistent moisture. Now, they need drainage. You cannot stick a pawpaw in a wet spot. You cannot stick a pawpaw in a soil that stays wet. The roots will rot. It needs drainage. So a lot of times you'll hear about them growing on the banks next to stream, you know, banks drain, but they're near all that moisture. You know, if they're in a floodplain next to a creek, they're going to be in an area that drains, not the parts that don't drain. But they do like those low, you know, again, not windy, almost sort of more stagnant and humid, like the tropics, but drainage and consistent access to moisture. So what I'm feeling in experimenting with is that, yes, it's more that than the sun. You know, I don't, so I'm also planting out. So I'll grow mine in shade cloth and full sun. just because it's a great growing condition to be in. They really kind of thrive in that. You could grow them under the, you know, under the shade of a deciduous tree. You know, if you only had a few pots or something, you could put them out there. And deer will eat most anything when it's really young and tender, but they do not like pawpaws. You know, especially once they get past about the third year, the leaves kind of take on a more leathery, you know, rougher texture, and the deer do not eat them.
You say that. You say that.
Uh-oh. I said it. What? You've seen them eat mature pawpaw twigs and leaves?
Yes.
Mature.
But then again, I live in an area that has is very I live next to the Cuyahoga National Park, and so there's a lot of deer pressure, and deer and wild turkey, well, the deer are the more problem. They came over and they ate my 3-year-old pawpaw trees with full leaves to the ground.
3 years old. Yeah. You're still in that potentially young range. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should up what I say. well, again, you know, and here's another thing that comes up. People are like, well, when is my pawpaw going to produce? And mm-hmm. it's going to vary, right? So what I tend to say is, if it's in full sun, when your pawpaws are about 6 feet tall, they will start to produce. You know, whereas people say, oh yeah, if it's from seedling, you know, it's 6 years till you get fruit, but it depends, you know, what's your conditions? You know, are you growing it in semi-shade? You know, how big is it? It's not, you know, a pawpaw in semi-shade and poor soil is not going to be 6 feet, you know, tall in 6 years and producing fruit. But the potential is that it could be 6 feet and produce fruit in 6 years. And certainly, you know, I grow mine on created, some of them that I have grown on swales. Have really shot up and easily been 6 feet in 6 years and begun to be very productive in its first couple of years of bearing even. So my, you know, my 3-year-old pawpaw tree is not your 3-year-old pawpaw tree,
right.
Et cetera, et cetera. But yes, the deer will eat things that are young and tender, but the pawpaw leaves and twigs have a natural medicinal compound, you know, that, you know, scientists have pulled out and called acetogenins. So, which is a phenomenal medicinal that's being used in cancer treatments and also in helping people deal with chemotherapy. Very strong medicinals. I mean, indigenous people have always interacted with the medicinal compounds, you know, the pawpaw and their family in general. So therefore, you know, it's really, you know, the animals are just not going to go to town on it because of that high medicinal compound, at least, you know, past a certain extent. You know, a young tree, some leaves, some twigs, fine. But, you know, our trees, you know, once they're up and growing, and I keep my orchard style trees, the ones in my food forest, I keep them at 8 to 10 feet tall. And so they're, you know, they're quite bushy. So, I mean, the deer, and we have herds of deer, will be all around them and not eat them. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not preferred, I guess, under dire circumstances and different pressures. So I need to edit my deer information there. But, generally speaking, it is, you know, once they're established, you know, they're really not of interest to the deer.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I recommend, if those of you who are going out and you're looking for pawpaws or get a chance to encounter a pawpaw, break a leaf off and break it in half and smell it, because it's going to have a very strong scent to it. And that's what the deer are smelling. They're not going to eat that.
Like, very aromatic. Almost reminds me of the roots, too. Almost like a peppery type essential oil smell. Yeah.
Yep, it's a very strong smell. All right, well, unfortunately, we are out of time.
Okay. I was just gonna talk quickly that I mentioned you can keep your trees low. Mm-hmm. So they do that very easily. I do not usually recommend top working anything, but you can keep a pawpaw top worked. It'll refill that gap quickly and look attractive. So you can squeeze these into smaller spaces, keep them at 8 feet tall, an average spacing is 10 to 12 feet apart. So you could easily graft a pair, you could put a pair, I should say, you know, into an area of your yard, you know, if this is a suburban yard, to begin interacting and playing with these. That's just a last bit of encouragement there.
Yeah, that's great. And so you've given us some really great information, and I love the fact that you brought it up, brought up pawpaws as an ornamental as well. So for those out there who are interested, even if you're not interested in it from a food perspective, think about growing pawpaws as ornamental. So thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. I really appreciate it. Your book is absolutely beautiful. If people are interested in buying your book, where can they purchase it?
Well, I mean, if you want a signed copy, you can get them from our website, which is ecologiadesign.com. My first book, Edible Landscaping with a Permaculture Twist, is there as well. And they're great. They're great together. So I send out copies, of course, the ever-present Amazon. It's distributed by Chelsea Green internationally, so it's pretty much out there in the world. We have Kindle editions. You can get electronically as well. Come to our Pawpaw Fest, you know, come get a copy and a tree there. If you're in the Maryland area in March, April, and May, usually on Saturdays, I have nursery hours, and people can come and walk around our food forests and, you know, really see all this come to life. You know, a lot of uncommon but really easy to grow fruits and nuts, and we grow mushrooms, and like we have a circular straw bale round wood timber framed house that is inspired by the Earth Haven experience 20 some years ago. We have a really cool homestead, a lot to learn from and experience. So if you're anywhere in the vicinity, you know, come when we have events. We do some tours, of course, the nursery or the Pawpaw Fest, and come connect.
That's perfect, and hopefully we'll have some speakers of pawpaws at our next annual conference, which will be next August in Eastern Pennsylvania. But there's just so much to learn, so thank you so much. We'll call it a day here. Thank you, and hopefully we'll have you on as a guest again. So thank you for joining us on GoNuts.